They do a great job of very subtly portraying the stress between Irish Christians and Roman Christians in the Vitrix comic, where Vitrix doesn't understand who Romans are. He, mm-hmm. you know, he just saw the Roman army destroy his people. Mm-hmm. So he asks the monk if he's Roman. He goes, well, we just pay lip service to Rome here.
Yeah, well, I tried to show that there were three different tendencies, that there was the Roman church tradition that really feels beholden to Rome and that looks up to Rome for authority. And I had the English monk essentially be the right. symbol of that, because it was in fact the English clergy that eventually were influential in pulling.
It was that line the English monk says, those Irish always breaking the rules.
Right, exactly. So he represents that tendency, and then you have the Celtic Church tendency, which sees itself as part of the Roman Church, but is very much into its own independence. That is, feeling that, mm-hmm. yes, you can look up to Rome, but what do the Roman authorities have to tell us about the way we run things? They're not in our country.
Right.
They don't know what our communities are like. They have nothing to tell us. And then there's also the substrate of pagan learning. I have the Celtic monks at one point when they need to call upon the spirits of the land to defend the community of Iona. And they all know a lot about the pagan lore, of course. It's not official. It's not a part
right.
of their official learning. And it's sort of heretical. It's not really kosher with the church. But they all know about it. And
they were expecting Vitrix's arrival, even. They just didn't know who he would be.
Right. So they're sort of wary of using it, but at the same time, they're not afraid of using it when they really have to.
Mm-hmm.
So there's this sort of undercurrent of pre-Christian knowledge and learning that is surviving within the Christian context, even though they're, you know, not entirely sure what to make of it.
And there's that great picture of a Celtic cross that Don Hudson drew
mm-hmm.
that really just takes over, really, the whole story. I mean, that's mm-hmm. that's the panel everybody remembers.
Yeah, where I show that the pattern of the Celtic cross, even though it's an overt Christian symbol.
Yeah, well, there's Christ in the middle of it.
Yes, but the structure of the cross conveys pre-Christian traditions about the structure of the world and the year and time and the divinities that rule yeah. the different phases of it, and they're all put in the cross, as they are indeed on a lot of Celtic Christian art, where you have pre-Christian ideas that are worked into mm-hmm. Christian scenes.
You know, real religion mm-hmm. is very rare in fiction. And in fact, publishers actively discourage authors
right.
from using real religions.
Mm-hmm.
And there you are, putting, you know, real religions, you know, current day, ancient real religions, and, you know, you don't make things up.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that there's a fear today of what religion represents. And in a way, religion is the most important aspect, I think, of human thinking and human relating. Religion means linking. That's what the word literally means.
Well, publishers are also yeah. worried about complaints. If you
right.
have a real Christian, well, mm-hmm. of course, it's like Wishful Christian. If you have an individual character, mm-hmm. he's going to be an individual aspect of mm-hmm. Christianity. So every reader who is Christian, who doesn't share that aspect,
right.
is going to get pissed. Mm-hmm. That's not what they're like.
Well, that depends. If your character is made to represent Christianity or is shown like a mouthpiece for a particular religion, which is not the artistic way of introducing religion.
Yeah, but publishers are afraid that yeah. just, you know, you can establish him as, you know, you can give him all the character, all kinds mm-hmm. of background, and people are still going to complain.
Probably.
And publishers are afraid of complaints. Books mm-hmm. don't sell well enough to afford to have a bunch of people complaining about them.
Well, yes, but I think that's the risk you take with any good artistic statement.
Mm-hmm.
Said, if it's good, it'll probably offend somebody because it'll touch somebody. You know?
Well, I as someone who sells Vitrix at conventions, it does indeed offend people.
Mm-hmm.
And it's interesting because it offends Christians and pagans both.
Well, yes, because I present both views as valid.
So. Yeah, I mean, the pagans are angry that the Christians are good guys, and the Christians are angry that the pagans are good guys, and they're like, well, mm-hmm. you know, can't we all just get along?
Well, because I think both Vitrix is presented as someone who is attached to the truth, whatever it is.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the way he's been trained. So he does not get compartmentalize people that he meets. He simply tests them for their character, you know, whether they're good people or not. And if they're good people, by his experience, by his testing of them, right, then they're valid. Well, their views are valid. Everything that goes to make their worldview is also valid. You know,
he's not interested
in the label that they might have.
In the first issue, the god Lu awakens Vitorix's second sight because he hadn't been trained to get it.
Mm-hmm.
And you talk about that in the Apple Branch, about the druidic training, you know, giving the druids their second sight. What is
I don't remember I talked about that in the Apple Branch.
Yeah, you mentioned second sight in the Apple Branch.
I mentioned second sight, but second sight is really a, in the modern, I mean, in Celtic tradition as it's come down to us, it's really a gift that people are born with, and a talent that people have, and that sometimes runs in certain families. It's particularly prevalent in the Highlands. You have a lot of families in the Highlands where people claim to have second sight.
And what is that? What is
second sight is basically an ability to, in certain circumstances, to transcend space and time, to be able to see things that are happening far away, or to be able to be clairvoyant and see events that have not yet taken place, but be able to warn people about them. Sometimes it can also be seeing the past, seeing things that are, you know, that have taken place in certain places, mm-hmm. and you can relive that event when you're there. But again, it's usually not something that you can train for. You can train perhaps to control it or to not have it frighten you, as it often does when it first manifests in people. But usually it's just a gift that is sort of unexplained and that is felt to be hereditary to run in certain lineages. I portray Vitorix as having that gift but not having it manifest yet.
Yeah.
So I show Lu because Lu is the power of illumination. So he basically manifests the gift so he can use it later on.
And before we go to phone calls, since we do have the time to take them this week, explain the grid, which is the antagonist in Vitorix.
Well, the grid was a way of, again, through comic book language, through using, you know, sort of simple and direct idea. The grid is the power of uniformity and compartmentalization. It's what basically puts the brakes on the free development and evolution of life, of real organic life on Earth. It's human culture at its most degrading and unliving, that is trying to reduce everything to the most simple common denominator and to force everybody into it for short-term gain. And so I present it here as something completely alien to human life. I mean, they're actually shown as alien creatures that are trying to impose this on the Earth. And you have people like Vitorix, or who can see the grid, can understand what they're doing, who are set against them, whereas other humans are shown as being very susceptible to what the grid has
to offer. And
you have
the grid manipulating the Romans to destroy the Druidical College.
Exactly, yes.
They manipulate the police in France to try to stop Nolan from getting to the anti-nuclear demonstration.
Right, exactly. So that was basically a way of portraying all of these tendencies that I find dangerous and anti-life, understanding the relationship between tribe and land.
Right.
In our culture, it was a way of presenting it in a kind of supervillain quality in the comic book, in which, of course, I go into it in more detail in the Apple Branch, describing it historically and culturally within the context of our everyday life.
You sort of have you know, that sort of entity, both capitalism and communism, being the same aspects of that entity.
Yes, because they're after the same things. It's just who holds the power. It's slightly different, but not very different.